10 better ways to use a bed.
Well, I'm looking at a bed right now, so I'm staring at a bed.
Okay, go on. Okay.
You're stepping into the ring with two guys who pull no punches. This is Entrepreneur Showdown.
Happy Monday morning, everybody. It is the Entrepreneur Showdown podcast. I'm Dan Franks, the man with the master plan, my partner in crime, Joe Cassandra, coming on in just a bit. We have an exciting interview for you today with Mike Vardy. He is the productivityist, and he's going to school Joe and I on how to be productive, and we're going to get into a lot of fun stuff with Mike. He's quite the character, and we're super excited to have him on. But as you know, we are the home of the no-holds-barred entrepreneur interview, so we're not going to let him off the hook too easy, so stick around for that. Don't forget, for the show notes of today's episode and a whole lot more, you can check them out at entrepreneurshowdown.com. But we've got such an action-packed episode today, I don't want to waste any more time, so let's get on with the showdown.
Round one.
What Joe and I want to do right now is something a little different. Typically, we'll pick out some kind of article here in round one, and we'll talk about the merits of the article or some of the topics discussed. But sometimes in the early episodes, Joe and I would talk about some things that related to what we were doing on a day-to-day basis and kind of get away from the article method. And that's what we want to do right now, because at Joe and my day job the other day, we went through this process of, I guess you would call it, self-evaluation. There's these tests, and you've probably heard of the Myers-Briggs and the Wunderlich and the Strengths Finders, and there's all these books and all these tests out there that help you evaluate yourself, and they're all a little bit different. They evaluate your strengths or your personality or your learning style. And Joe and I went through a series of these, and then we had a professional evaluator come in and kind of go over our results with us. But really what it was meant to do is not only learn about ourselves, but learn about those that we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis, and really work on working with other people that we're working with and learning about them and their personalities, really trying to leverage that to work together better. So, first of all, Joe, I got to be honest, when we first entered this process, I wasn't so sure about it, because you hear about a lot of these, you know, tests, these people coming in. And to me, I always thought, oh, it's kind of like a scam, right? It's like these people are coming in and charging you money to tell you about yourself. And they really, it's all about the buildup of what they're actually going to do. And there's not really any substance. But I was, I guess, pleasantly surprised would be the good way to put it, out of what I got out of this. But going into it, what did you expect out of this kind of process?
I mean, I've taken like tests on like BuzzFeed and stuff. I get kind of those, like, those just kind of those general things that you hear about yourself. Oh, you're very, you're a friendly person, all this other crap, which doesn't help you in any of the least bit. So that's what I was kind of thinking going into it, because especially when people who give these tests kind of pitch it also as, well, then you can learn about your coworkers and learn how to best work with them. And I'm like, there's just so many situations, like there's no way you'd be able to like get each scenario nailed down and whatnot. But the tests that you take for these, and they're called like the Colby test. There's a Strengths Finders 2.0 test, which you can go out and get the book and do the stuff online and whatnot. It actually goes really in depth with not really your personality, but more just what is your natural inclination towards towards adversity, towards stress, and all these different things, and how do you handle those? And you get these very detailed results based on the test that you take, which has, I don't remember how many questions. It was over 100 or whatever. And it's really interesting, because you can learn how someone thinks just by looking at their scores right away. You can kind of tell how they handle different situations, how they handle problems and whatnot. And I thought it was, after I took the test and saw the results, I was actually really surprised as well.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you've taken tests like these on BuzzFeed or places like that. And I think there are a lot of these tests floating around, because I've taken them in college for different college courses and things like that. But I've never actually, once I finished the test, had a quote-unquote expert who explained to me, okay, now here's your answers, read over your answers, and then I'm actually going to tell you kind of what that means. Because a lot of these tests are very sophisticated, and you know, when you read over the one page summary about what the test tells you, that can only go so deep. But when you have somebody that for their job, they interpret these and they can kind of talk about patterns and talk about what they've seen. And something I thought was interesting was that in that Colby test you mentioned, which to me, it had a lot to do about learning styles and working styles. It wasn't necessarily a personality test or anything like that, but it divided things up into four different categories and three boxes in each category. And the two categories that they said, well, people that are very entrepreneurial rank very high in these two specific categories. And you and I both were ranked really high in there. So I felt like an invisible high five needed to be done for us on that one. We're at least somewhat on the right track. But we would have never known that. Like, we took that test and we read our own results, but that kind of thing doesn't really come through. Something else that I learned about myself was that there's, you know, whatever, 5% of the people that take this test are actually considered natural multitaskers. And we've talked about multitasking and things like that before. And most of the time you see multitasking as being detrimental. But what I learned from my results were that, you know, that 5% of people actually work better when they're multitasking. They're more productive and their work is better when they're multitasking versus not multitasking. But, and, you know, so 5% work one way and 95% the other way. And I fell into that 5%. So just these things about interpreting these tests, that's what I got the most out of, was not the test itself, but somebody there that was kind of an expert in that test and could tell me what it means. I think without that, I wouldn't have gotten anything out of it, really.
Yeah. And it's having that someone who's a expert in these type of tests, which kind of sounds dumb, like, oh, they're an expert in this test, but especially because it's not like an SAT or anything like that. It's just like a personality. Well, not a personality, because that's not what these tests were, but like a whatever your nature is, it's those kind of tests. But having someone there to explain it, and like we did activities where everyone in the room would split off in their categories and you can kind of get like a visual picture of, okay, these people all kind of think alike. This person thinks a little differently than that group of people over there, and then this person way over here thinks way differently than all these people over here. And you understand right away when, and I've had this experience already, that people suddenly realize, oh, you always frustrate me because of this, and now I understand why, because it just doesn't come as naturally to you as it does maybe to myself and this group of people over here. And so, I mean, I guess the point of this is that, and we're not trying to promote these tests or anything like that. Well, maybe we are, because I think we had good results from it. But to be able to find some sort of, I don't know, some sort of tool that helps your team, especially if you're working closely on different projects, and you can tell that people have different ways that they do things. Taking these kind of tests may actually be a great icebreaker into having those conversations on, okay, how should we work with each of these people, because they each do something differently, and some have these natural strengths, like you said, you have the natural strength to multitask, where some people, it just doesn't come as naturally to them. And if you're working, if someone is on your team and they're not good at multitasking, that's probably going to be frustrating for you, because you're like, dang, I can multitask really well. Why can't this person do it? And if you're in a team where you take these kind of tests and see those kind of results, you may be able it may be a little easier to have that conversation where you can say, hey, I know you're not a natural multitasker. Let's figure out a way to work around that or help each other in a certain area.
Yeah, and I think that's where the real value from this was learning not just about yourself, but about those around you. So if you're a solopreneur, maybe the value wouldn't really be in this, because you're kind of learning about yourself. But whatever amount of money it would cost to get that expert in there to interpret it might not be the best use of your money. Likewise, if you work for a really large company where you're working with all different people at different times, or you don't really, you know, work a lot one-on-one with the same people over and over, maybe it's not going to be super valuable. But a company like us, where we're pretty small, we're very dynamic, we're open to doing, you know, different things and different activities like this to try to better ourselves and better the team. And I would think a lot of the people that are listening to us that are either small business owners or maybe employees of small businesses, this is something that's really valuable, because, you know, teamwork is very, it's so vital. Like you and I don't think there's anybody in our company that we haven't at one time worked one-on-one with. You know, almost everybody in our firm, even though it's not super tiny. You know, we got 35 or 40 people, but everyone we've worked with at one time or another. And now just being able to get together as a group and learn about each other and really leverage each other's strengths and understand each other's weaknesses, that's just huge. And it's going to help teamwork. It's going to help productivity. I just think all across the board, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be really good. So, you know, maybe 6 months from now, we'll report back and see if that actually, proved itself out. But I think from now, I feel like I have such a clearer picture of those around me. So I'd highly recommend for any small business owners that are listening or people that work for small businesses that are pretty dynamic and open to doing different things and trying, you know, experiments to improve the company. It's definitely something I recommend.
Yeah. And most of our listeners are in small company type situations. And like you said, if you work by yourself, you're not going to get really that much value except learning about yourself. But if you're in a position, and especially if you're the manager of people, I think you're going to get a lot more out of it because, like I said, the people that are doing work for you and you're monitoring their work, there may be stuff about them that frustrates you a ton. And I know this from my experience because my managers are telling me this now that this is actual feedback of the results. They saw my results and they're like, yes, now I understand why you always do this and why it frustrates the heck out of us. But for you, that just comes natural like that. So especially if you're in a managerial position, if you're the founder and you have a couple people working under you, it may be worthwhile to get to take some of these type of tests and figure out who you're working with so you can kind of play to each other's strengths. Because that's what these tests are about. They're about finding your strengths and then making those strengths more of their brand, even more of a strength. And instead of focusing on weaknesses, which a lot of people will do, they say, well, I'm not good at this. Maybe I should just try and work more at that. They say, forget the weaknesses, delegate that stuff, and just work on the stuff that you're really good at. And if you can have a well-rounded team where you're all really good at different strengths and themes is what they call it, then you're more likely probably to succeed in the long run.
Yeah, and I think that's the key right there is that, you know, small business owners, they want to hire a bunch of people that are like them because they think like them and maybe they have the same work ethic or the same techniques as them. But in reality, like you said, there's people that are completely different, learn in different ways, produce in different ways, but that really does round out the team and kind of create mutually beneficial characteristics amongst the whole team and really does further the team along and help them grow as opposed to everyone being the same and having the same viewpoint. So Joe, I'm going to ask you to, I think we should include the link to the company that administered this for us, just if anyone's interested in doing a little more research, highly recommend them. We'll include that in the show notes at entrepreneurshowdown.com. But with that, let's get on to round two.
Round two.
Right now, what Joe and I are looking at is an article about productivity. And it's one of my favorite topics to talk about because it's always one of my weak spots. And it's always somewhere that you can learn new techniques and improve places. And it also happens to be our main event guest, Mike Vardy, is from the Productivityist blog. And he has a podcast and he does a lot of talks as well. So he'll be coming on to talk about productivity with us. But Joe, what I want to do is just kind of look at this article that we're basing it on, and he calls it The Way of the Productivityist, a Manifesto. I get a little tongue-tied there. And it's interesting because he talks about how a productivityist is different than being like, I thought that was interesting. I don't know if you really picked up on that, and I want to ask Mike about what the difference is. But he goes down this list and has like a top 10 list of the ways of the productivityist. And the one that just jumps out to me, ironically enough, is number one. This is the one that affects me the most out of all. And he says, don't fight your body clock. So just because common wisdom says you need to, you know, early to bed, early to rise kind of thing, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're the most productive.
We'll tell the listeners what your sleep schedule is like, because I know you have a crazy one.
Well, my sleep schedule is just absolutely awful. So my sleep schedule is I wake up early and I go to bed late. The times change a little bit, but the sleep part of it is very small. So I'm pretty sure that Mike will disagree with the sleep schedule that I keep. But yeah, so he just talks about how if you're a night owl, then maybe that's when you should be doing the majority of your work, even though people say the early bird gets the worm and all that stuff. You know, all these common sayings make you think that you should get your most work done at a certain time of day, typically the morning. He's saying you need to listen to your body more than anything else.
So what does that mean, to listen to your body? Because I know if my eyes start getting a little tired, it doesn't mean I'm not interested in the material that I'm working on anymore. It just means, hey, maybe I've been staring at the screen too long. So is it when you start maybe losing interest and start losing quality, or is it when you start, I don't know, like your eyes get tired, or like I always get really hungry, so that's how I take a detour. Like, what's the...
Well, but there's some people that are the exact opposite. In the morning, they'll be really hard to, you know, wake up. They wake up very slowly, so they don't get tired necessarily in the evening. They have to almost force themselves to go to bed at night once they're done working. But in the morning, that's kind of their slow time where they're nodding off. So I think that's exactly what he means by listening to your body. You know, if you start nodding off at night, that means you're not as productive. Whereas some other people that have a real hard time getting started in the morning, that's when they're least productive.
Well, one of the ones that I was a little confused about is number three he talks about. And like Dan mentions, there's 10 of them, so you'll have to check out the article to read them all. But it's stop doing productive, start being productive. And I guess if you just say it and think about it, I guess it means just because you're doing something, it doesn't mean you're being productive. But then at the same time, if you're not doing something, then you're not being productive. So if you're doing something, then you're being productive. Does that logic make sense?
Well, I think you ran in about three or four circles just there, running around the doing and the being. But yeah, this one stood out to me too. And I wanted to ask him about that because he says, stop doing productive, start being productive. And I think that, you know, you can analyze what that means very closely, but just stepping back, it means just because you're doing something, doing busy work, being a little worker ant or whatever you want to call it, that doesn't mean you're actually getting anything done. You know, you see plenty of people that at work do things like and make it look like they're busy, but at the end of the day, they haven't got anywhere. So that I think doing productive, you just making yourself feel productive because your hands are busy or whatever it is, but actually being productive and, you know, proceeding through whatever it is you're trying to get through, that's actually being productive. So I think it's maybe more simple than you're trying to make it out to be.
Maybe I'm thinking, because I'm trying to see the philosophical side of what he's trying to say, but I just have trouble with some of this type of stuff because it's not extra uber specific. It's this philosophical mindset type thing, which is tricky because we all have a way that we work. We all work a different way. We all go through tasks a different way. And when someone tries to put a mindset spin on it, that kind of throws you off from how you like to do things. So,
well, but I think that's why he's being theoretical here. You know, it is somewhat mindset, but that's because everyone does work different. So if he comes out with super tactical things to do, that's not going to work for everybody. Whereas if he comes out with things like, hey, listen to your own body and then adjust accordingly for yourself, that might be broad and, you know, theoretical, but it's going to be more effective than him saying do it all in the morning or do it all at night or do it in 20 minute spurts or all these different productivity techniques. He's just saying listen to your body. Don't just adopt some kind of system because that's what you heard works or you've heard someone else that uses it effectively. He's saying use whatever your body uses and be willing to kind of make adjustments and test some things around. So I kind of like the fact that it's not super tactical. However, there's one that is tactical and it's very simple, but it works wonders for me. And I constantly do this, you know, for interviews, for work, for to-do lists, anything. And it's just write something down. And it's that physical act of putting pen to paper that not only gets your muscle memory, you know, memorizing or remembering what you write down, but just actually seeing something in front of you, even if you shut off your computer screen or if your computer screens have three different things all over them, you still have this piece of paper in front of you with whatever it is you need to get done or whatever it is you wrote down. And that's huge. And we've talked about this before, but since you brought up the mindset thing, well, that's something tactical that's proven to work.
Do you ever use like the Windows like on screen notepad, or do you don't find that as effective?
No, I mean the digital products I always find least effective. Even like Evernote, it's good for certain things, but for my to-do list or for something that really just needs to get done, I can't use Evernote. I can, you know, put some random thoughts in there knowing I'm going to go back to them. But if it's, you know, something that I need to be productive about, you know, for the productivityist, if it's something like that, I absolutely get way more out of it by writing it down physically. But with that, let's get on with the productivity talk and maybe talk to an expert here. And Joe and I, we can stop our rambling and get somebody that knows what he's doing. A full-time productivityist, Mike Vardy, is up next.
It's time for the main event.
We're here in the main event, and our guest today is no stranger to the big stage. Mike Vardy is a productivity enthusiast. He has taken the stage at New Media Expo, TEDx Victoria, and he even has his own creative life course. His words have graced the pages of Success Magazine, Huffington Post, Lifehacker, and more. Mike is also one half of the dynamic duo that joined forces to make up the popular Mike's on Mike's podcast on the 5x5 Network. Mike also writes on his own site, Productivityist, and we've brought him on today to discuss one of his most epic pieces, The Way of the Productivityist, a manifesto. So without further delay, Mike Vardy, what's up, man?
Hey, Dan, good to see you. Thanks for having me on, and Joe, nice to meet you.
Yeah.
Well, Joe, that's a very cordial introduction.
Well, no, straight to the point. Hey, that's very task over time oriented. It's like, yep.
There you go. Down. I'm being productive here.
There you go. Well, Mike, usually we dive right into our topic at hand, but for anyone who doesn't know you and doesn't know your backstory, have you been a guest on another podcast or maybe one episode of your own that you tell your backstory really well?
I was on the Biz Republic's People Who Know Their... podcast recently. I've been on several. Basically, if you go to my site, you go to my about page, you'll get that as well. Gary Miller's Better Guy podcast, he did a three-parter with me. So that's, if you really want to hear like everything and their uncle about me, then that'd be a good one to listen to as well.
So you know your aunt really well, is that what you're saying?
I do know my aunt really well, yes.
Well, then good. Then I'm glad you're the guest and we're the ones asking the question.
I've been spending a lot of time dealing with that aunt for a long time.
So you're not full of aunt like some other people. Okay.
No, and I try to cut out the bull aunt whenever I can, because I think a lot of the stuff that in the realm of productivity can get really like wrapped up in the tech and really wrapped up in the whole like, hey, how to get as much done as possible. Like, we tend to try to, and I think I'm seeing a trend where we're trying to get away from that and maybe checking off, and I've said this before, but checking off the right boxes as opposed to trying to check off all the boxes, because it's just not possible. I think people are finally going, you know what, maybe taking a little bit of a breath, spending some time doing the right things as opposed to trying to do everything. I think that's what I try to, you know, talk to people about, because that's the kind of thing that people really want to know more about, as opposed to just how do I do more productive stuff. It's more, you know, how do I be more productive?
Well, since you brought up the checking off the boxes and all that, in this article you talk about that and you say the why to-do list might be better. What is this why to-do list?
So it was funny. I was reading a review of, I think it was Todd Henry's book, The Die Empty. And Todd Henry's a great writer. I don't know if you guys know who he is, but he's the founder of Accidental Creative. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, one of the things that comes up was the idea of GTD, or getting things done, which is the methodology that David Allen has prescribed and he pretty much created. And one person was criticizing it, saying that GTD, it's just about making lists and more lists and more lists, and you get to the point where you're overwhelmed. And I agree to a point. I think that the big tenet of GTD is to capture stuff. I think that what happens is a lot of people just keep things in their head, don't write them down. So when they capture things, to me, most people would assume that that's their list. It's a to-do list. Here are all the things I need to do. But the why to-do list is kind of it's almost like the curation process. It's the, okay, I need to take a picture of my beer cellar because I want to update Evernote. Okay, well, do I really need to do that? Why am I doing this? It's more like of a deeper dive. And once you do that often enough, the dive isn't that deep. You know, when you start swimming in deeper water as a swimmer, the more you do, you know, the more you get proficient at that, it doesn't seem as deep. You're not as, you know, you're not as worried about, hey, look how deep this water is. So the why to-do list is more, it adds meaning to that list that you've written, or all those lists that you have. And I think that if more people looked at their lists and said, okay, well, how do I add value or meaning to this, whether it's by using contexts that matter or whatnot, I think that will help you do the things that you're really meant to do. And that doesn't necessarily mean all the things you want to do, because let me be clear, there are things that you have to do, but why are you doing them? And maybe that can lead to some of the more deeper meaning stuff. And maybe you can figure out a way to get out of the things that you don't want to do, but seem to have to do. So I think that's the missing ingredient. That's another thing that I try to kind of push people towards, is like, okay, you've got your list. Now look at it. And why are you doing those things? Or why do you feel you need to do those things?
Well, here's something that I do that's kind of weird. I just think of a topic and I just write down like 10 ideas that I'll probably never pursue. But I do it just to kind of like keep my creativity bubble flowing. Is that unproductive doing that? Because I don't have a why to do it. I'm just doing it to keep my mind fresh. It's kind of like a puzzle for me. I'm thinking of what's 10 better ways to use, I don't know, a bed or whatever. And I'm just writing down those ideas. I'm never going to use those ideas. But is there some unproductive thing I'm doing because I'm doing that?
10 better ways to use a bed.
Well, I'm looking at a bed right now, so I'm staring at a bed. Okay, go on.
You saw the Lego movie, didn't you? Like the double-decker sofa bed.
No, but I heard it was really good. I gotta check it out.
It truly is. Everything is awesome in that movie. But no, here, I think it's James Altucher, you know, who, and I'm going to, it's either James Altucher or James Altucher.
That's Joe's man crush, so he's James. Very familiar.
So that's where you got that from, right?
Yes, exactly.
And there is some definite credibility to that, because if anything, it may spur on something that it kind of loosens the lid a little bit. Do you know what I mean? Like it kind of can free up some of that creative thinking for the things that you know you may be able to move forward with. I was talking about this on the upcoming Mics on Mics that we're going to be airing as we're recording this. This will be episode, I think, 109 of Mics on Mics that's going up. And we talk kind of about like what we do when we're stuck. And for me, I try to get out of my head a bit, you know, so whether that's, you know, like we were talking before we got in the air, watching some pro wrestling, or, you know, getting on a bike or going for a run or playing even playing a video game, that I'll try to get out of my head so I can move some certain things forward. That's a way of getting out of your head. Just like, hey, I got these 10 ways I can make a bed better, or 10 uses I can have for a bed, or, you know, let's see, 10 things I can add to my beer cellar, you know, like even because you start to evolve that stuff. So I think that that's a great thing to do, because it's outside the box and you never know what the results will yield. The thing is, it's that kind of an action is far better than any sort of inaction in a lot of ways.
Well, I guess going to when you say like you have some wind down time and you watch wrestling or whatever. I know if I come home and I've worked a lot, and I'm mentally tired and I sit in front of the TV, I'm automatically thinking, man, I feel like, but I really should be doing something, but I'm really tired. And so I guess I'm using that as an excuse to be lazy and watch TV. But at the same time, all you hear is, hey, it's turn off the TV. You got to be working 24/7. So is there a balance somewhere, or am I missing something? Should I always be pursuing the next goal or something, even after I've worked a long time on maybe something else?
No, I think that there's definitely some merit to taking some downtime, because your brain needs to rest. Tony Schwartz talks about the idea of, you know, energy recovery and stuff like that. And I'm a big believer. In fact, the contexts I use are all energy related. So that way, if I don't feel at my best on a given day, I can look at my task manager and go, okay, well, what low energy tasks do I have that I can accomplish? Okay, I'm going to move those 5 things forward. I did some things today that will, you know, hopefully lead to bigger things. Great, I feel much better about that. But the other thing is, I mean, I've done this before when it comes to TV watching, is, you know, the sleep function that no one uses on their television?
No.
You know where there is even this my old TV, which is sitting in the, you know, we got to get rid of it, sitting in the driveway right now. That's like a big mammoth TV. It had the, like,
keeping it classy, Mike.
Yeah, keeping it classy. Yeah, exactly. Hey, I live in a neighborhood where people might want to take that thing. Nice. It actually has the ability to say sleep after 15 minutes, 30 minutes, 60 minutes, 90 minutes, whatever. Even the new LG smart TV we have has the same thing. So that could be, I mean, anything that can act as a trigger. The fact you're aware that you are sitting in front of TV and you're going, man, there's some other things that I really have on my plate right now, but I'm really tired. Maybe the other trigger you need is the TV turning off after 60 minutes, or maybe an alarm going off after 60 minutes on your smartphone or whatever. I mean, it's okay to give yourself permission to do that stuff. It's when we stay and kind of wallow in that stuff that we run into the problem. It's the same thing with me and exercise. I'm not a big believer in scheduling tasks on a calendar. And for those of you who anyone who's read my stuff, and I know Dan, you listened to my stuff before. I mean, the calendar, like David Allen says, for me is for date specific appointments. Exercise for me has become that because I tried to put it in my task manager and it would just stay not done. Then I put it on a specific day to be done, and unless I actually scheduled it a specific time, it wasn't getting done. So you have to, when you have that awareness about yourself, then you can start to say, hey, how do I trigger this action to take place? Is it, do I put it on my calendar? Do I set a reminder? Do I do it when I first walk in the door and then, you know, give myself a beer at the end as a reward for completing the task? Anything like that, anything that can act as a trigger to help you get that important thing done is worthwhile pursuing.
Nothing is better at the end of exercise than a beer to reward yourself.
Exactly. Exactly.
The darker and the fuller, the better.
Doesn't that just dehydrate you more, though?
I don't necessarily have beer after I'm done working out, but I will say that if I didn't do the workout during the day, then I don't get a beer at the end of the day. And even Schechter did this. Schechter was doing this, my podcast partner on Mics on Mics. If he didn't reach a certain word count before the end of the day, he didn't get a beer.
Well, that's motivation to put something on the paper.
Exactly. So it's whatever works, right? And I think that we get stuck on the, I need to do this without having a reason, you know, why. And if you have a compelling reason why, or you have a compelling reward or whatever, that will help you, then I use it, you know, have those triggers there. Because all productivity stuff boils down to is awareness. Obviously, willpower plays a part in discipline, but everything should act as a trigger. Everything that we use, all these apps, it doesn't matter what app you use, you should have triggers built into that spur you to action.
Well, a lot of this that we just talked about is somewhat similar, and it relates to something that you've talked about quite a bit, and that's the body clock. Mm. And Joe and I talked about this a little bit, and really, I guess, tell us your theory on the body clock and what that means to productivity, and then we can go from there.
Well, I've tried on many occasions to become an early riser. As somebody who practiced, improv and did comedy for several years, my body was attuned to being up late at night because that's when the comedy shows were happening. But I prescribed to the notion that, oh, well, in order to be more productive, you need to get up early in the morning. But what I found was that I was spending so much of my energy and resources trying to get up early in the morning that I was no more productive. And my creative energy actually is better at night because that's when I was performing. So when it comes to the body clock, what I say in the manifesto is don't fight your body clock. So if your body says, hey, you know what, my best ideas, my best thoughts, my best writing, my best work comes at 7 p.m. at night, then go with it, you know, and adjust accordingly. Now, not everybody's going to be able to, you know, not get up until 8 o'clock because they have to work at 7. But you certainly don't have to get up at 4 a.m. to get those things done. As Brian Tracy says, eat that frog. You don't need to get up at 4, 3, 4, 5 a.m. to do it. You can, if you're naturally, you know, attenuated to predisposed to work at night, then go with it. Because what you're doing is, when you fight your body clock, is you're using that energy that could be better used to getting really great stuff done, you're spending it trying to adjust what time you should go to bed and what time you should get up.
Well, something that I've noticed about myself and my body clock is that in the morning I feel like I'm most productive, I get the most good quality work done. But then in the evening, I may be more creative, mm-hmm. for whatever reason. I think it's probably not the beer, but that might help.
But they do, I do say there's been studies that said that beer does definitely help with creative thinking.
Well, then maybe I'll give it like 10% of the credit. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm very much more productive in the morning, but more creative in the evening. Is that common? Is that something that we can kind of analyze for ourselves and learn how to leverage that?
I think so. I mean, it's funny. I mentioned eat that frog. For me, I mean, the actual term that he uses, eat that frog, is to get the big important thing out of the way, is to do the big task, is to, you know, which is the one that you're probably avoiding for most of the day because you've got a bunch of other busy work. To me, eating that frog is to get the really gross, like, I don't want to do this, but I have to do it. So in the morning, when I'm at my least creative, creative, but I'm still somewhat productive. I mean, I can get work done. I do the stuff that doesn't require a lot of bandwidth, a lot of energy, for example. So I'll do, like, you know, admin work or answer emails or whatever after, you know, I've done my one big thing for the day, because I don't check email first thing in the morning either. But I think that you need to be, again, you need to be self-aware. It's like, hey, you know what? I seem to do really great creative work at night. So maybe that's when I do, like what Joe was saying, those brain dumps of those ideas that, you know, may or may not hold true down the line. And maybe you do the actual, you know, flushing out or writing of it in the morning. But I think that the problem is we get so hung up in the time, we forget to focus on the task. And my TEDx talk, I talk about how to stop time. And ultimately, I'm not saying disregard time, but if we put time secondary and put task first, we're going to get a lot more of the stuff we really want to put out there and at a much higher quality.
Well, I'm not sure if you were serious about the study, but does alcohol really stimulate creativity that if someone is in a rut, they should maybe try and have a beer and maybe that'll start getting something going?
I was serious. I'll try to find the link and send it to you, because I was reading a study. It probably is on Fast Company or something like that, one of those sites I always read. But yeah, they're saying that you know, beer is, or alcohol is, it does, I mean, obviously not to a point where you're not able to do it. save that for some other night. But well, I mean, I think that it does, because you some of the I guess some of your not your limitations, but your your predisposed notions fall aside, right? You're not as critical. You're not as that won't work, because you tend to go, okay, well, whatever, let's give it a try. So you got a bit more free form thinking. I think that there's nothing wrong with that. I think that I mean, just like they say, coffee is great for when you really want to get going in the morning. A lot of people say that, and there's studies that say that coffee is helpful early in the day, and then tea is great for throughout the day, because the caffeine, you know, draw is much slower, so you're not gonna, you know, have those peaks and valleys. But I think that, again, and I mean, you've seen it, I've seen comedians that'll have a beer before going, you know, on stage. Yeah. And then they'll have afterwards, right? They won't, but, and I don't know if you guys have noticed it, but if you watch stand-ups, they'll never drink on stage. The good ones will drink water. A lot of them will drink beer before and after, but very few will drink beer on stage, because it doesn't help with focus all that much. But it definitely helps with creative flow, I think. And there have been, and I will at least find that study for you and make sure you've got it, so that way I don't seem like some guy that's off his rocker.
But, so it's not some just Vardyism coming through exactly. The speakers.
Exactly. It's like, well, that's why he has the beer cellar. So he can be really super creative at any given time of day. But again, I think when it comes to the body clock stuff, it's important to focus on the tasks you have to do, because I mean, I get things done at 10, 11 p.m. that people normally on the East Coast will get done at 4 or 5 in the morning. That doesn't make me any less productive or any more productive. It just makes me different.
Well, I guess staying on the creative side, I'm going to go into a gray area, and I'm a big Beatles fan, and they wrote a lot of their great songs on drugs. So have you heard any studies about that?
I haven't, although I do live in a province fairly free flowing with them. So no, I haven't. You guys, where are you guys? You guys are in Texas, right?
Texas, yeah.
Yeah, there's no chance you're gonna get any of it there.
No chance.
Go to Colorado or Washington State, or apparently California is thinking about it too. I think when it comes to creative stuff, the biggest thing you can do when it comes to just getting that creative flow going is just to do what you were talking about, Joe. It's just to write it down, to get those thoughts out of your head. The biggest thing I've talked about when it comes to productivity, the first step, and anyone will say it, is capture. I keep notebooks in my I have a dedicated pen for my jacket and a dedicated notebook, like little flip notebooks that are in all my jackets. I've got one by my nightstand just in case I have an idea in the middle of the night, or just in case I'm on the road and I have an idea. Because I mean, let's face it, paper, it's not going to crash on you. You're not going to run out of battery. Like you care. So, I mean, for me, though, to me, that is critical. How you process that and how you want to deal with that stuff you capture, whether you're using any of hallucinogenic or not, is completely up to you. Maybe you will make the next Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. I'm not sure. But I think that the key is to get it out of your head so that you can do something with it.
So use paper, don't roll paper. That's what you're saying.
Just say yes to paper, except when you should say no to paper.
Joe, is that why you were laughing off mic, Joe? Because you had that joke built up this whole time?
Yes. He's just ready. He's just ready, you know.
Okay. Well, off the paper talk.
And the grass is always greener on the other side. So let's keep that in mind.
There you go. Okay. One of the points you make is you talk about
Joe, you go from laughing to serious so quickly. It's pretty impressive, actually.
I'm trying, because I thought that was pretty clever. But you talk about urgency, and the second one you say push through urgency to get to important. And this is I ask this question to a lot of people, mostly because I struggle with it. But you hear a lot of people they say, okay, I lost my job, and so suddenly I have this urgency to create something amazing, and you hear people that do that. But what about people who aren't in that situation? How do they create that type of urgency and create that super productivity-ness that suddenly these people are laid off, they're suddenly able to pull out of their aces?
It's an interesting question. I mean, I think that, again, when it comes to that urgent versus important, is that we tend to get them confused a lot. You know, a lot of people will look at the urgent stuff and assume it's important all the time, and it's not the case. And I think that the difficulty with businesses, especially when you're either when you're starting out a business or when you're in a well-established one, is that those lines get blurred very easily. And also you have other people that what you think is urgent may not be all that urgent. And what you think is important, someone else may not think is all that important. But the key with anything that's urgent is you should try as much as possible to make sure that anything that's urgent and important never becomes so urgent that you need to you know, jump on it right away. So for anybody that's struggling with that, one of the things I'll say immediately is stop using due dates. Like, really, because that to me, I mean, we've all done this. We've all crammed for that last exam, right? You know, where it's like, oh, I got time. And then by the time the exam rolls around, you're like, uh-oh. I gotta stay up all night, or you just give up, right? It's one or the other. It's like, oh, well, you know. I mean, Douglas Adams has that great quote about deadlines. I love the sound. I love deadlines. I like the sound that they make as they whiz on by or whatever. Yeah. I think that what happens is that if we start focusing on the task element of things. So if we put down, hey, I've got this task I need to accomplish, and we use a digital task manager, and we put in there, hey, I need to work on this task every single day, and then you have it done like a week before the due date. I mean, no one's ever been fired or reprimanded for handing something in early, right? Like, you're not going to hand it in to your boss, and your boss is going to go, wait a minute, Jones, I didn't want this till next week. What's going on, right? Instead, obviously, if you run into a boss who does that, you've got a problem. And number two, you may be setting yourself up for future expectations. So again, awareness comes into play here. Should I hand this in a week earlier, maybe 3 days early? Because I know Mr. Smith is going to, you know, expect me to now give me less time going forward. So that's a big one, is to stop worrying about due dates and kind of make every day a due date, you know, going forward. And the other thing is really be honest with, hey, is this really important, or is this important, but it's not something that, or is it, sorry, is it urgent, but is it not important? As in, do I have to be the one that does this? And this all comes from like the Eisenhower matrix, or the priority matrix, as Stephen Covey calls it, where, I mean, if you look at a project or even a day of the week, and you can break it down and say, okay, what do I have to do today? All right, well, here's all the stuff that's urgent and important. That stuff needs to get done right away. Here's the stuff that's important but not urgent. Hey, this stuff doesn't need to be done right away, but I want to foster this. Oh, this stuff is not important but urgent. Hey, do I need to be the guy that does this? Like, Dan, you're doing the podcast movement thing, right? So there's probably stuff in there that's important or urgent but not important that you do that needs to be dealt with. So you could say, hey, you know, Jared, can you do this? Or, hey, web designer, you need to do this. And then there's stuff that's going to fall into the not urgent, not important stuff. And this is the most valuable part of that exercise, is you can say, hey, you know what? I don't need to do this at all. It doesn't even need to be done, because we often write things down that we think we need to do, and either we waited too long and now they're not even relevant anymore, which is unfortunately what happens a lot of the time, or hey, why did I even write this down? I wrote it down because I wanted to practice the capture habit, but I don't need to do this at all. So I don't know if I totally answered your question, but I think that when we start to focus on the important over the urgent, you'll find that you're going to be doing the right things as opposed to just trying to keep up with, no pun intended, the Joneses.
Well, Mike, I want to go back because you talked about not having due dates, but almost anything that we're working on is going to have some sort of deadline, sure, whether it's self-imposed or imposed by the client or the customer or the boss or whoever that is. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times if you do kind of, you know, not impose that deadline and you get things done early, like you said, a lot of times you're not going to turn it in early, but you'll just dwell on it and you'll keep repeating and working over it and mulling over it and revising and revising, and it becomes such a time suck. Can't that also be a negative if you get something done early like that? Because then you just keep rereading it and re-editing it, and it just goes on and on and on, and then it sucks more time than it would have if you had waited till that deadline.
I think that the problem there is that you've created the deadline as this thing that's the last chance you have to do anything with it. I think that when you work on something regularly up until the point that you finished it and you're happy with it, then it should go. It should be sent off. If your deadline, no one's ever been angry if it gets sent in early. The worst they can do is send it back for revisions, at which point in time that falls outside of the scope of the initial project. In a lot of cases, I've had people send things back to me and they're like, oh, wow, you got this done early. Can you make these other changes? And I'm like, yes, I got it done early. These changes, this is your one set of changes that I will do, but future ones are not included. And yeah, in some cases people will go, well, wait a minute, but you finished early. I'm like, yes I did. I finished early. I finished the project early. That I'm a time management guy. That's kind of what I do. So I think I'm not saying that you don't need to keep them in mind. What I'm saying is that when you put them on a calendar, or you put them into your, when you make yourself so aware that they exist, that they're facing you front and center, then you're going to say, I have until this time to get it done. And that's the more dangerous trap than the, hey, I'm going to revise this up until the due date or up until it's scheduled to be in. You want to put yourself in a position where you're getting things done earlier so that you can move on to the next thing, because earlier is defined generally by these dates that are, yes, they're deadlines, but they're not drop dead. Like, you don't want to put yourself in a position where you're saying, okay, I have to get this done by today. You should be putting yourself in a position where you're like, okay, this is done. Now let me move on to the next thing until I hear back from this person who probably won't look at it for a week anyways, because they're probably using deadlines. So I think it's a far less dangerous trap to fall into. And frankly, if you're falling into the trap of revise up until the due date because you're fiddling with it, then you're fiddling with it. And then you've got a whole other problem. This is where you probably should be saying, I'm going to ship this. I'm happy with the work I've done. And once you do it often enough, then you're going to basically put yourself in a position where, hey, look, you know what? Deadlines, they exist, but they don't matter to me nearly as much as actually getting the work done.
Hey, Joe, I picked a good line out of there that you need to start using on your boss.
Tell me.
Future changes not included.
There you go.
Try that one out and see how it works.
If you're, again, I'm speaking from a freelance perspective.
But so we can apply to Mike Vardy with our unemployment for our unemployment payments, not go. The state.
The kicker, and again, every situation is going to be different, but I think the important thing to notice is that if you get the work done earlier, then they're going to start looking at you differently than if you get it done the day of. That they're going to start looking at you differently. Now, whether that's a good or bad thing, completely, I mean, your boss may start handing you more work, at which point in time you could say, you know what, I'm now going to schedule a task as opposed to putting it on the calendar saying, hand in assignment X on this day, which is 2 days before, right? So you're going to have to make a judgment call on that. But the point I'm trying to make is if you work to the deadline, then you're going to work to the deadline. And chances are you're not going to be able to put your best foot forward all the way through the process. And you're going to end up cramming at some point in time or another.
Well, Mike, you mentioned before we started recording that we've done a number of productivity type talks before recently. Last episode, Joe and I did a round one on productivity, and now we're doing a round two and an interview on productivity. And it's somewhat because it's front of mind for us because we're both in the tax business. So this is the time of year where we're the busiest.
Yes.
But when we talked about before we started recording, some of the topics that Joe and I mentioned last week, we talked about accountability, and Joe and I both agreed that that was one of the biggest things was accountability, but you said it's kind of a double-edged sword. Can you talk about what you meant by that?
Yeah, I think that we get into a point where when we start to crowdsource this kind of stuff, and I mean, that's a buzzword, I know, but it's very apt. I think that accountability needs to be well-placed as opposed to, used unilaterally. I think, for example, when you talk about, again, you guys talked about the podcast movement, like you have to do that now. You put it out there and said, hey, we're going to do this. But it was well planned. You said, hey, this is what we plan on doing, and this is what we're going to do, and we're going to add more stuff as we go. And, you know, now you can pre-order. So you gauged your audience, basically. You essentially, what you're doing by putting that out there, for lack of a better term, it is simplified, is you're doing a paid survey. Really, like you're saying, hey, who wants to buy in? And as soon as you reached your goal, you're like, okay, this is happening now. Now we need to move forward. Crowdsourcing for me is a bad idea when it comes to habits in a lot of ways, because you, on a regular basis, if you do this for so many of them, and again, this other people may need this. I certainly don't need it all the time. You tend to, first off, it's just another app to open, which can cause a lot of problems, unless you've actually got it scheduled, like, hey, open up Lyft.com and write that I flossed today. We tend to get too, reductive or even granular with these kind of things. I think that there is a time and a place for it. Crowdsourcing tasks can be great in a team environment, but I mean, it was funny. The yesterday, I actually put on Facebook because I did laundry, and I do laundry all the time. I'm a stay-at-home dad, so it's not like it's the first time doing laundry. But here's an example. So I put out there that my daughter, I apologize publicly to my parents for not turning my clothes inside right side in. For the years, and you laugh because we all did it. Yep. And my daughter's doing it now. And the conversation went from that to, and I shared it on Facebook. And I mean, if you guys, I mean, Dan, I know you follow me on Facebook, so you could probably find it. It turned into my wife saying at one point, well, imagine how I feel since I do most of the laundry. And what about you and your sleeves and how you roll them up? And all of a sudden the conversation turned. And of course I put the little, hey, hun, let's not air our dirty laundry in public kind of thing. But yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, I had to make it, because otherwise, if I didn't make a joke about it, and that's the funny thing, is if I didn't make a joke about it, then, and I didn't say anything, then it would be like, Mike's upset, or Mike's just abandoned this thing or whatever. Whereas, and then all of a sudden everyone else chimed in, oh, you're right, I hate it when my husband does this rolling sleeve thing. And all of a sudden the conversation got way veered off. And all I was doing was basically saying, hey, you know, I wasn't even saying I do laundry. I was just saying something. So I think the same kind of thing can happen when you're doing these crowdsourcing things, is that the intent of why you're doing it in the first place can get lost in the sharing component of it. Maybe not to that degree, but it can get lost in that. So I think that you need to, I mean, for me, I use visual avatars as a lot of my driving force. I'm looking right now at my desk, and I've got the Beat Resistance plaque from Stephen Pressfield's Do the Work. That to me is a big one. I wear a Green Lantern ring. That to me signifies willpower, and it shows I'm a comic book fan. There's certain things I use that will help me push through those things. And I think that you need to pick and choose your spots when it comes to crowdsourcing or I guess championing the accountability component, because ultimately I think it just contributes to all the noise.
Well, Mike, before we wrap up here, as you are a productivityist, what are some of your, I guess, go-to productivity tools besides the pencil and paper, because we all agree that that's super super valuable. But what are your most your go-to productivity tools, and maybe what are some new ones that you're using right now?
Well, when it comes to the apps I use regularly, Evernote's a big one. So Evernote's where I do a lot of like my idea storming or project like notes and resources. So basically, if it's an email or something that comes to me that has information or a resource, it goes to Evernote. When it comes to task management, I mean, I use OmniFocus for the Mac as well as for iOS. I use Asana for team-based stuff, but I'm also using Todoist a lot more now too. I'm starting to actually move some of my OmniFocus stuff into Todoist, because Todoist is cross-platform. Like for those who use Android and Windows, they can't use OmniFocus, at least not directly. In this case, I can. So that's another one. For capturing ideas, I use Drafts for iOS. It's a fantastic tool, which means I can, and basically what it does is I capture everything in there and I can send it to whatever app I feel is most appropriate. Maybe my calendar app, which is Fantastical, or my writing app, which is Byword. And then when it comes to some of the other apps, I mean, Dispatch is what I use for email on iOS, because it again has that action-based email. And Postbox is what I'm using for the Mac for my email, which is also available for Windows. And I use it because it has Evernote and Todoist integration built right in. So I try to build what I call a productivity gestalt. So kind of like, remember the Transformers that would be like the five, like the aerial bots, the Constructicons, and they'd combine into like one creature. That's what I try to do with my tools, because...
Well, the Power Rangers did that too.
That's true. The Power Rangers did it as well. No, did the Power... Yes, the Zords, right, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, the Megazords,
yeah. So for me, I try to do that with those different tools. Each of them does something really well, but I'd like them to all be able to speak to each other. And now I think we're getting to a point where they all need to be able to speak to each other on a variety of platforms. And while the Mac and iOS have been highly touted for their productivity components for the longest time, we can't discount Android and Windows, because let's face it, a lot more people are using those nowadays.
Well, as an Android user, that warms my heart to hear you say that, Mike.
You gotta try Todoist. It's really quite nice. I'm a big fan of what they're doing, and it's like $30 a year for a great task management app, so it's worth looking at.
Sweet.
Well, I have that one written down. Mike, where is a good place for people to go to learn more about you and check out what you're doing on a day-to-day basis?
Well, you can find me at productivityist.com. That's productivity, then IST.com. And also, I'm at Mike Vardy on the Twitter. So you can find me there. And, you know, if you Google my name, Mike Vardy, you'll find me at a bunch of other places as well.
Yeah, it helps to have a somewhat unique name.
It does.
Stand out from the crowd.
There's only one other guy I know that has this name, and he's a British director. But I've moved him on, I think, to like the second page now. So it's all good.
Did you get made fun of growing up by they calling you Farty Vardy?
I did. Okay. I did. And the funny thing is that tardy rhymes with Vardy, which is also a challenge here. Yeah. So that happened all the time. And believe me, I'm on the lookout for that with my kids now. And I'm like, don't you even go down that road. But definitely happened.
Love it.
Awesome. Well, very cool, Mike. Thanks for joining us from one sleeve roller to another.
Me too.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'd love it if you join us every Monday morning to hear the latest episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown podcast. Remember, the place to go to find the show notes of today's episode and a whole lot more is www.entrepreneurshowdown.com. And while you're there, leave us your email address to find out about upcoming guests, latest episode releases, and a whole lot more.